sure hope you're hungry. Ooh, I'm starving. Wash those hands, pull up a chair, and secure that feed bag. Because it's time to listen to Scott Tolinsky and Wes Boss attempt to use human language to converse with and pick the brains of other developers. I thought there was going to be food. So buckle up and grab that O-shit handle, because this ride is going to get wild. This is the Syntax Supper Club.
Welcome to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Today, we have a super good one. Have you ever wanted a system like React without all the complicated choices around things like performance? Or, you know, why can't our app frameworks be smarter and take out some of the pain while giving us full control over the UIs like we have? Well, today we have Ryan Carniato to talk about Solid and how Solid.js is taking a modern approach to some of the framework stuff that we've been working on for a little while. Ryan, welcome. How's it going?
It's going good. I'm glad to be here. I've wanted to come on and talk to you guys about this for quite some time, so I'm very happy to be here today.
Yeah, likewise. You've been one of our most requested guests. People have been really loving Solid and wanting to hear all about it. So I think we're really psyched to really pin down exactly what makes Solid so interesting and special and just all about the work that you're doing. So Ryan, do you want to give us like a quick introduction of who you are, what you're doing, but also maybe a elevator pitch for Solid and why should people pay attention?
Sure, yeah. I currently work at Netlify on open source, but that's only been in the last year, and that was to work on open source and Solid.js. But myself, I was just a guy working in startups. I'm from Canada, Vancouver, BC, and I was working in startups for like a decade, maintaining long-lived apps. And at a certain point, I was just looking at trying to streamline the process of what I was doing at work. We had a really old Knockout JS app. Yeah, the guy who hired me was actually the creator of Knockback JS, which was like a backbone Knockout thing. So we kind of had our custom stack. And then he left after a couple of years. And then, you know, someone's got to maintain the code base. And I went and I was like, oh, this could be better. And I was kind of working in my, you know, my own time. And I just built Solid basically out of that, just the experiences I had working in that kind of reactive system. Cutting it short, I basically had built like another reactive framework in a time when I guess reactive frameworks weren't actually that popular. Everybody had discovered React and the virtual DOM. And I saw some benefits to what React was doing, but I also really liked what I'd always done. And this probably wouldn't have even got here. Like, I wouldn't be sitting here if it wasn't for a bunch of different aspects coming together. But React went and released React Hooks in 2018. And it was like suddenly this light was shone on reactive solutions in general, right? This is where View Composition APIs, Svelte 3, all these kind of originated from that. But in Solid's case, it was a little different. We had those kind of primitives beforehand because that's what Solid is. It actually wouldn't work otherwise. We don't really have components in the typical sense, which makes Solid very different from a lot of other modern frameworks. We basically had these hook-like primitives, and then you can picture just, you know, minding your own business, doing that kind of thing, and then suddenly React's like, this is how you're going to build apps in the future. And honestly, everything's been a roller coaster for me since then.
Wow. So how long has Solid as an idea been around?
I made my first commit in a private Bitbucket repo in August 2016.
Cool.
I was working on stuff, you know, throughout that year. My oldest daughter was born in July 2015, and sometime during that year of being, you know, half awake, half asleep, I just started like, you know, going, oh, I'm awake anyways. Let's just kind of hammer on this idea, and I started kind of playing around with, you know, different reactivity and different approaches, and then finally, I was like, okay, let's try and make something out of it. But it wasn't until 2018 that I open sourced it because I wanted to join some benchmarks. But it was just something that I'd been kind of like playing around with different ideas because I want to kind of modernize Knockout.js, really. I really like that framework, if you can't tell.
Yeah, it's funny. Knockout, I just went to their website because I wanted to relive Knockout a little bit. Man, that thing has not changed. It's the same old website.
Which is incredible because, like, if you look at it, they were, like, interactive tutorials and whatnot, they were kind of, like, ahead of the curve. Just like the whole teaching thing, and they right off the bat, you know, you go through, learn about observables and computeds and like basic reactivity. They were really quite ahead of their game at the time. It's funny to see it now, like over a decade later.
Yeah, it has that like very specific like Starburst aesthetic that I went nuts for in this era. It's definitely hit me in all those spots.
Yeah, it brings me back to the old jQuery days of when this kind of stuff and what else was of this era? CoffeeScript, jQuery Mobile, SensaTouch, all those good things.
Our code base, that Knockout code base I was telling you about, was written in CoffeeScript. I was writing CoffeeScript code all the way into 2020, around the time that eBay hired me, because it was just like I was working on that startup, CoffeeScript Knockout, and we were actually just started our big, you know, 7-year or 8-year rewrite at that point, which some people find kind of amusing. We ended up going with React. Even though I wrote Solid, the pragmatist in me is like, after supporting this like small like homebrewed library in our startup for years, I was like, you know what, you know, like I can't do that to the developers again. Let's make a different decision. So we went with Preact, and we actually end up turning into React because it was around Preact 10. It was a little bit shaky with some of like the features we wanted. We wanted all that modern suspense stuff and hook stuff because again we were Knockout developers. That was the piece that we wanted. And it wasn't like, it was just at the transition period. If it had been a year or two later, I would have had a different answer. But it just, you got to be pragmatic at the time.
Yeah, I get that.
Oh, yeah. And sorry, this was at the company you're at before eBay, or this was at eBay?
Before eBay. eBay okay. Largely uses an framework that is open source. You can go use it. And that's what I worked on at eBay, Marco.js, which is an Islands MPA style framework, which is incredible in its own right. They basically had a lot of the modern Islands out of order streaming thing everyone's raving over the last year or so, like back in 2014. Like, that's how they moved their stack off Java to JavaScript. They needed to have that kind of performance for e-commerce. And in e-commerce, that matters a lot.
Yeah, the Marco stuff is cool. I just did a quick search in my inbox. There's I think it was Sean Gates. Was he one of the original creators of it? He's been trying to get me to, maybe not Sean something.
Patrick Item Steele was the one who made Marco originally. He was the creator also of Morph DOM, which gets used in a lot of like random places like Phoenix Live View and like other kind of things.
Oh, we just talked about that.
We just talked about that, yeah.
But
we're having a bit of a framework roundup on Syntax lately. So it's funny, all these different tools we keep hearing about.
Yeah. So Sean Gates, I believe, was involved, but Patrick was the original creator. Okay. And he left in 2017, which is a hard hit for the team in the sense that like kind of left it in, there was only a couple engineers working on it and they had the support all of eBay. And I joined the team around 2020, which was kind of an interesting time period for many reasons, but on the technology side, at least, it was a time period when no one had even heard of this kind of technology. Really, no one paid any attention. This was like 6 months before Jason Miller's Islands article. This is about a year before Astro came out. And I was like, wow, how can this exist? And I started to write about it and get people excited. But like, it takes a lot. That's something I've realized over the years. Even with Solid, like I wasn't trying to get it. Like, it wasn't like improving on React. I was just doing my thing. If I had tried to push Solid before Hooks came out, I don't think anyone would be paying attention. Like that's kind of the reality of these things. It takes the whole ecosystem to kind of move. So that's something I just watch or pay attention to, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So let's talk Solid. First off, I guess, do you want to give like what is Solid to the average developer who might just be, you know, hearing us talk about all these frameworks? What is Solid? What sets it apart? What does it look like to write Solid?
Right. I mean, when people first see Solid, they definitely think of a few things, and it's usually because the way they've been told about it or what they see. And one thing is, doesn't this look a lot like React? And the other thing is, like, I heard this is really performant. It doesn't have a virtual DOM. And both of those things are great. Being familiar and being fast are good things. But as I mentioned before, like Solid didn't come around to be like improve on React. Because I liked those libraries before, I just kind of pulled elements from different places. So like if you come in and use Solid, you're going to be immediately presented with your first primitive, kind of think of it like a hook, and it's called create signal. And that's kind of the core of your experience here. What we have is reactive primitives, which are basically stateful variables that can automatically track and update, and JSX. These two elements kind of come together, and that forms the experience, which is pretty important to us because a lot of reactive libraries don't use JSX. In fact, they use custom template DSLs, and there's a reason for that because there's reactivity runs differently than let's say a VDOM library does. So there's different kind of considerations that go into designing how that looks. But for Solid's case, I really really wanted to emphasize composition, building blocks. Like the idea is like you have these primitives, like if you use create signal, you could also make create local state signal or whatever, or local storage signal. Like basically this ability to just kind of build up on the base primitives. And we extend that kind of mentality, not just to like our hooks, so to speak, but to our control flow. Like if you have a for loop, or map function is what they do in React, how easy is it to go from that to a custom one like paginated or virtual list? And what I came to realize is we almost always just end up with components in this case. So Solid very much kind of builds on this idea that I guess it's item potency in framework design, in the idea that the end user should be able to create the primitives that the library ships. And that, is an interesting design choice and what makes Solid is what it is. But the other piece, and this is the part that's not as obvious to people, is people also hear that Solid uses a compiler. And that is true, but maybe not in the way that people kind of associate compilers this day. Solid uses compiler to transform only JSX. And for the most part, that means that we aren't changing your code outside of the JSX. We're not changing like all your declarations. We're just kind of using a different transform than like how React does. It's actually kind of similar to React. Our mechanism is actually like 90% runtime. It's not actually compilers doing the things. It's very important that the pieces are composable. And with compilation, it's sometimes difficult to analyze everything ahead of time. You need very strict language. You need very strict guidelines to figure out how to do that. And we really wanted our primitives and our experience to kind of be built from these building blocks.
Nice.
Okay. So when you say that it compiles to, it says on the website, compiles to vanilla JavaScript, which is like, we've talked about that in the past, like something like Svelte will compile to vanilla JavaScript. So what does that mean in the context of Solid?
What it means is that like all JSX is transformed. So most of it uses this thing called HyperScript, which is like a series of function calls. In Solid's case, we can look at the shape of your templates, exactly like things like the DOM, or like where you have a bunch of native elements like divs and spans and whatever, and we can go, oh, this is the static parts and this is the dynamic parts, and we can kind of separate them out. So essentially what the compiled output ends up looking like is like, here, create these DOM elements, and then where there's these dynamic holes, use reactive primitives to update them. In fact, we have something in Solid called create effect, which is kind of like use effect, and people might be familiar with that, except we kind of welcome it a bit more in Solid, in that that's all we do. If someone looks at our code generation, they'll see like basically like create DOM elements, and then around each expression where it could change, it's a create effect. And I feel like for people kind of coming in to looking at Solid, it feels like very not magical, like much more like transparent, because you're like, oh yeah, like if I was writing this by hand, this is what I'd do myself. Like the compilation doesn't do something unexpected. It's like if someone didn't have JSX or didn't have all these kind of modern templating things and you're writing it jQuery style, I would just write it like this. And that kind of scale up, scale down kind of thing on Solid's design is really quite powerful, because it feels very close to the, like, as if you could just run it like jQuery or like vanilla JS. But then you write code that looks like React.
Makes sense. That's actually really cool to me, because I often demos and little projects and whatnot, I'll just run it straight up in vanilla JavaScript. But then I'm like, I kind of want the reactivity, you know? And it's nice to have that option. It's kind of cool that you can even look at the output of it and kind of see what it's doing. It's just creating DOM elements, and then where the, like let's say you had a span with a number in it, and that number could possibly change. You know that ahead of time, and then you'll set up for that.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually really simplistic heuristic. It's kind of surprises people. It's because JavaScript doesn't have reactive primitives in the language. You'd have to do like a lot more transformation, like Svelte does, exactly, to do it. So I can guess if something's going to be reactive if it calls a function or accesses a getter, like a member property. So all Solid does is when it sees like variables being passed in, it goes, okay, that can never change, or statics, that can never change. But if it has a function call in it, all we have to do is go, okay, if it's in the DOM, wrap it in a create effect. And if it's in like a component prop or something, we just wrap it in a getter. And this little trick lets us kind of lazy evaluate the whole tree. It's kind of funny how that works, because props are just getter functions. So everything's just functions down. The only code that gets called in the end is where it gets finally consumed in like a hook mm-hmm. or in the DOM. So if that span that you were just talking about, if it read like props.count that's coming in from above and you're setting some stuff above, the only code that needs to rerun there is that effect that's reading that count variable. It might call some functions to pull it down through the component tree, but no components re-render. And that's sort of what I mean when Solid doesn't have components, because there's no component instances. It's literally just a bunch of function calls that are just nested in each other to kind of set up the tree. And then once it's set up, we have reactivity to give us super fine-grained React updates. So it's a very different type of renderer, because even most other reactive libraries still have like a component instant. There is a component somewhere, and we don't.
So from the user's perspective, they're getting performance of not having to worry about that entire tree rendering, right? That's like one of the things they just get for free without having to put qualifications into their code and intermediary steps or anything like that, right?
Yeah, that's the incredible part about it, because you just write this and you get that modularity of still breaking your code into like components, so to speak. Like you still break everything apart, but because it all kind of just runs through the system, the benefit is like you just kind of author things the way that makes sense to you. And now those are the things that update. You don't have to really worry about it. And because the reactivity is kind of like not tied to the component system at all. You know, that's one of the challenges with the compiler. You almost always tie the reactivity to the component system. Global state, local state is all the same. Like there's no difference. You just create a signal. Wherever you put the signal, it works. We still use patterns like context that you might find in other frameworks. And this is because it's powerful to kind of have hierarchical tree ownership of things. But the cool thing, again, with Solid and its approach is you just create some signals in that provider way up in the tree and use them wherever else in the tree. And like only the things that use them will update. There's no like re-rendering of the tree. You know, like you could put 60 FPS animation in your context and not even think about it.
Nice. That's like one of the worst parts about context and the context API in React, right? You have to be very cognizant about how you're using it, or else you could cause a ton of re-renders that you didn't expect.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those kind of things where like I felt in the last couple of years, it just keeps to be these examples where, see, I'm a big fan of React, for those who don't know, and I really like that there's different philosophies and approaches to how we can build UIs, you know, and it's kind of like as old as like in graphics, there's this idea of like immediate mode versus retained mode, this idea of like things that like immediately do updates versus things where like they store a model in memory and then you kind of update the model. Like there's always like those kind of different models that improve performance or like simplify your mental model. So I like that these different things exist. But one of the more interesting things I found the last couple of years is a lot of the patterns that we've come to really depend upon in React actually work really well in reactive systems.
Awesome. Can you talk a bit more about, I think this is just a concept that a lot of our listeners would like to learn about is, I think that you use it, observables, as well as what these signals are, like the ideas behind them.
Yeah, signals is a funny thing, because yes, this whole thing started from my perspective because the water had gotten too muddy, so to speak. Observables are generally what is called like the reactive atom, like the most smallest piece of state that you can have in a reactive system. But the problem is everybody started using the term observables, even with different styles of reactivity. And I couldn't differentiate them, which was the problem, because RxJS happened to get fairly popular, and it uses observables to describe streams, which are not the same as observables are in Knockout. They're actually very different. And Rx is a different term for what observables are in like Knockout or MobX. They call them behavior subjects. Like I was just not having this conversation because I didn't want that comparison. So I was looking around for names, and one of the libraries I was really inspired by called SJS called them signals. And Elm actually early on had signals as well. And basically from that point, I was like, okay, I'm not calling these observables. I'm not going to get into that mess. I'm going to start calling them signals. And I started kind of referring to this type of reactivity as fine-grained reactivity as a way of differentiating from Rx. And to be fair, that's not like maybe the best descriptive term. It's just I was using this reactivity allowed you to do really fine-grained updates easily, whereas something, because it auto-tracks, where something like Rx does, it's like piping streams, and it generally lends actually more to libraries using things like virtual DOMs or diffing or wider kind of updates, just because of it's a pain, honestly, to wire up all the little updates. And if you aren't familiar with Rx, this might not make a ton of sense to you, but I wanted to split the water, so to speak, and be like, you're here and you're here, because even in Rx, these are different concepts. Yeah, so I just went with it. And it's kind of cool because it kind of differentiated. To be fair, Vue has this style of reactivity too, but because they didn't make it into primitives originally, it was part of like an options API hidden away, no one was really talking about this. Vue deserves a lot of credit also being in this kind of world of using this reactivity. But yeah, the last year or so, suddenly you can't go very far without hearing about signals, because Preact adopted signals, Quick adopted signals. I think Angular is even looking at adopting signals at this point.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I guess this is one of those things, like what's in a name? Like finally we got a name where it's like clear, like there's no confusion about like this is RxJS and this is this type of reactivity. So I don't even know what's the best name. Sometimes I think they should be swapped. Like signals maybe sound better for a stream. I don't know. But it is what it is.
Interesting. So if we were to like clear up what signals is, it's signals is reactive state that it like other pieces of the application know when that state is updated. Is that what that is? You can tell me I'm totally wrong.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, fair enough. I wanted like a history lesson here instead of actually answering the question.
Love the history lesson. Don't worry.
But
yeah, it's good.
Yeah, signals you can picture as like an atom of reactive state. And the key part of systems with signals is that usually there's usually two other pieces of the language, so to speak. There's the idea of derived data and the idea of side effects. And the whole key to the signal observer pattern is that when you use it with these derived values or with these side effects, reading the signal in the context, as in accessing its value underneath the function where those are executing, automatically tracks the updates. So you don't need dependency arrays and you don't need a compiler. This is not a compiled mechanism. It's literally just using the runtime stack. It's like what those things do is like, they're like, okay, I'm going to run a tracking effect, essentially, something that listens for signals. It just kind of puts something in a global, and then anytime a signal is read under that global, it's like, oh, hey, this effect's running right now. You should add it to its dependencies. And you can just picture it like adding it to like a set. And then next time when the signal gets updated, it just calls all those functions again. That's kind of the core mechanism of it.
Okay.
So it uses the fact that everything runs once. And then once it runs once, it can run again because it just keeps track of what it what happened the last time it ran.
Is it fair to say that is kind of similar to like ad event listener and like clicks, where you throw something? I guess it's not global, but is that somewhat similar or not?
People
totally?
Make the pub sub comparison as well, where you and they're like, yeah, I've used, you know, message streams and or message queues and all that kind of stuff. I think the biggest difference is in two ways. First of all, signals have a value to them. And this is part of why I was saying they're different than RxJS. Like, you, at any point, you can read them. Like, it's called pull, but you can, like, read the value. So you kind of view these as variables rather than, like, a container that passes messages. It changes the way you write stuff. And this, okay. The second difference is derived data can get complicated and messy, and side effects writing to other signals. And you can get into this mess. And this mess is actually what existed in KnockoutJS and kind of aided in its departure from mainstream front end. Mm-hmm. What happened, though, since then is libraries like MobX basically solved this, where instead of viewing deriving values, and by deriving, I mean, like, pretend you have count, now you have double count. Like, the idea of, like, you could create something that is based on that other value, but is also a value itself. Or, like, I don't know, like, taking a first name and a last name and then having a full name. And in the case of Solid, this is actually even the way it renders. Like, we use these kind of derived values to do control flow, like how we, like, convert a for loop into something that gets inserted in the DOM.
Yeah.
This kind of approach has to not just, like, butterfly effect on you. And one of the biggest innovations in the, well, it's now like 7 years old, is the idea that we actually can ensure that each function only runs once on a given change set of changes. So, and it runs in order to make sure that, like, all the changes apply at the same time. So basically there's a sort of scheduling topological sorting mechanism built in. So that's a huge piece of signals. Like, there's no diamond problem where, like, you send a bunch of messages out and then they converge and they notify too many times. Everything, like if you, from the same set of changes, you know that everything will run once. And that gives you a huge amount of predictability and guarantees. And that's something you don't find in a normal event system. We actually, like, trace through this, like, reactive graph, as we often call it.
Yeah, that was fantastically put. That makes a lot of sense.
Taking a slightly different direction, one thing I noticed is that you describe web components as first-class citizens in Solid. And I wanted to know, like, what does that mean in the context of how web components get used inside of Solid, and, like, what makes them first-class citizens?
Right. It's funny. I think some of that copy is from much earlier days. I was a big, big web components proponent. And the reason Solid doesn't have components today is because of web components. I was in that wave of people like, oh, now that we have web components, we can kind of, like, create our own framework to work the way we want. And then maybe in a few years, the browser will add a bunch of stuff and then we won't even need frameworks anymore. I was like, that was where my head was at. I was like, I tried to make our reactivity based off some, like, object.observe spec. And, like, later on, there's a observable spec. I was trying to, like, really align with it. So all the early work of Solid was around support for web components. I do stuff like our portals support shadow DOMs, so that you get the... If anyone's worked with web components with portals, it's kind of a pain to get the styling to, like, inject through in the way you want it to. I was, like, taking considerations of that. Our first version of Suspense worked with web components. Like, it actually was able to grab the elements and stick them on an off-screen document so that we could trigger the right DOM events.
Oh my gosh.
And actually make it work.
Oh, wow.
To be fair, that doesn't happen anymore. We do have Solid Element, which makes a really easy wrapper. And we do support stuff like our event delegation works through, bubbles through the, what do you call it? Like, the web component boundaries. Like, we actually, like, reverse the, they do something where, like, they try and isolate it. We kind of reverse that so we can still make it work. Like, there's a lot of consideration we gave to web components in the design and handling of them because of that, those early days. I have to admit, the web component side has not got the latest features. It has not got server-side rendering and hydration. It has not got transitions and concurrent rendering and any of that kind of stuff. So
yeah, it's funny. I just saw that, and it's like, it's just like one of those things where, like, the promise of web components is never, like, truly matched the actual experience of it. And so it was just interesting to see.
That's the question I wanted to ask. why aren't we using web components? Because Scott and I for years were like, maybe we'll get into web components. And then recently we've been starting to look a little bit more over at them, be like, maybe we should be checking them out. But like why are we not all using web components? Do you have any thoughts there?
I have a few. I think it's mostly that there's like a mismatch of expectation that kind of happened. When web components were first presented, we were looking for something. We were looking for now that we're it was early days for us building full apps in the browser. Like really, even though Ajax was 2005, I want to say. And Chrome and, SpiderMonkey, V8, all the performance stuff happened around 2007, 2008. It took a while, and then the first real JavaScript frameworks was 2009, 2010 time period, in terms of full frameworks. I know there's Moo tools and stuff, but I mean Backbone or Angular or whatever. And so web components are coming out of that world in 2012 kind of time period. And I think what we wanted or expected to solve there was a little bit different. And it's kind of unfortunate that there's the word component to mean what we mean in modern frameworks and what it means in web components, and those not being the same thing. And I think what we've seen over time is that even the frameworks that are very HTML first, give this feeling of being closer to the DOM, stuff like Marco or Svelte or whatever, they've moved over time even further from some of those semantics. Things like slots, for example, are eager in the DOM and not in frameworks, because we've realized, we want to orchestrate stuff better. We want more control. And I think we've just seen this divergence, essentially, where there's a difference between wanting elements that do stuff, which is what web components are, and writing modular code which orchestrates applications, which is what components and frameworks are. They basically have different ranges of expectation and use. So I feel like there's probably places where I want web components, things like widgets and the Zendesk thing that's popping up in the corner, or maybe some kind of design system where I was I'm going to make these kind of things that are elements, but treating them as frameworks, in that sort of way, there's kind of this mismatch. You can do it, but the challenge is that, at least what I found is you're just kind of adding this DOM element overhead and extra boundaries in a place where you don't actually need any of that. And that was a big revelation for me, because I was building everything with web components and I was benchmarking and scaling stuff. And then I was just why am I putting all these extra DOM elements in here that I don't need?
Yeah. And it's funny. I mean, that aligns with my experience too, where I prefer to write everything in a framework, but now the things I use a web component for would be a video streaming element, right? Video streaming has edge cases. It has JavaScript that's required. It has UI things that I don't want to have to deal with. It. Draw a web component on there. It's an element. And then it the framework can orchestrate everything else. Do we want to maybe get into Solid Start a little bit? By the way, Solid Start, awesome name. Just about as good of name as you can have for this type of thing. So
yeah, that's fantastic.
Solid Start being what I consider, or what people are maybe calling a meta framework, an application framework for building things in Solid. What's the situation in which you would pick Solid Start versus picking Solid?
Right. That's an interesting question. And it's something that I've been kind of working out over the last couple of years. I've been working on Solid Start for a while now. It came out because I realized that trying to get started with SSR was just really, really difficult. And I did want to make Solid Start in such a way that if I was going to go as far as being more opinionated, that any Solid project could benefit from it, including having client-only render modes and whatnot. But generally speaking, you set out with that kind of ambition. You're maybe this is just the starter template. I didn't want to limit stuff to Solid Start, but it's nice to have things like file system routing, and it's nice to have things opinionated data fetch models. It's just a weird, there's a certain awkwardness for Solid itself in this case, because I'm very much primitive focused. I've kind of established that. And having opinions like that is something I never wanted to do. So for the longest time, and it wasn't the longest time, it was only a couple of years, it's funny, I have articles from when I first released SSR in 2019 or whatever, where I'm just what's coming next? And I'm not Next.js, I'm not doing that. Someone else can do that. and now that's exactly what I've been doing. If you're just, especially right now today, if you're just doing client-side app stuff, you should just grab one of our templates. It's Vite. It's if you're in that create React app zone of the world, just pick up, do you get one of our templates? It's just you know, Vite thing and you're good to go. I think we will probably push more people in that direction to get kind of like, there's this expectation these days to kind of like have all the pieces in. So that's really where Solid Start kind of comes together, especially if you want SSR. But I think it's always hard for me personally because it's like sort of at conflict with like how my kind of view of how the world works. And Solid Start is actually designed kind of interestingly because of that. Because like almost every piece of it is opt-outable. Like it's just a collection of Vite plugins and that you use or don't use. And like in Solid Start, the router isn't Solid Start router. It's just Solid's normal router. The meta library is just Solid's normal meta library. Even though we've implemented things like progressive enhancement, you know the whole like form kind of trick that, you know, SvelteKit and Remix do, we did it in a way that these are just importable primitives. People who don't want to use it, like they just go grab, what is it called? A TanStack query or, you know, Solid query. And they just plug that in and use that instead. Like, go for it. Basically, because Solid's primitives, we have something called resources. We have a data fetching primitive that we introduced a couple years ago. And it handles automatically serialization client and server. It handles streaming. It handles like the suspense. It just does that whole thing automatically. So as long as the creator of Solid query or whatever uses a resource under the hood, suddenly they've unlocked all that stuff. I very carefully built everything in a way that someone could come in and use Solid Start, have good defaults where they could just build stuff, but then just be like, yeah, no, I'm doing completely my own stuff.
It's fascinating because the whole meta framework thing, the more of these frameworks that we dive deeply into and you know, just about everybody has this meta framework now, they all kind of draw the point at a different line. So, you know, Svelte has no router. So to have a router, you need to use SvelteKit or any, you know, other user land thing. But Next.js, you're either picking Next.js or you are picking React Router. And with yours, you have a router that you can use outside of the meta framework. And then when we were just talking to Mishko about Quick, their meta framework is primarily for the router itself, where they have server-side rendering without the meta framework. So it's really interesting everybody has a different like line drawn there. I think Solid's approach is really neat, where you can pick and choose, and it is almost like opinionated defaults and those types of things. It's a nice approach.
Yeah, I've seen this for a while now, that routing is the backbone of web applications. Every time we've had a major jump generationally, it's been actually really related to the advances in routing. Because if you think about it, obviously, moving to single page apps in the first place wasn't quite that. It was Ajax and that did it. But if you look at like the advent of like our isomorphic stage, it was, we needed push state. Like, we needed to be able to handle slashes. Hash routing was not going to work anymore. And I feel like if you've looked at it, like, again, single page app is a client router. That's a big advance in routing compared to having like Express, you know, handling it. So like, we basically, every time we change the routing, we've actually changed the generation of the framework. And I can see why routing is a big part of the thing. And the thing with Solid was, because of the primitive approach, I did try and solve the routing stuff outside of the meta framework, because I wanted other people to be able to make meta frameworks. The thing is, or they could build their own router too, but I just wanted to have like, you choose the building blocks that you want. And
yeah,
there's enough stuff with reactivity that's new to people that I think it's good to have these around, because a lot of like, we got a lot of pressure at one point to like, why don't you add Solid to Remix? And people are working on that. But like, Remix and React fundamentally work a little bit different than how Solid works. So it's like, it's actually challenging to figure out like how to make that work in a way versus something that's dedicated to that approach. So I think it is interesting to see the split. The commonality is that there's some sort of slightly more opinionated layer that exists so that people can get started easier because of the growing complexity of things, which is very much a real concern and something that I think about a lot.
Let's talk about JSX a little bit more. Seems to be that a lot of frameworks are adopting JSX, which is nice because you don't have to install the plugins and everything like that and whatnot. What are your thoughts on JSX, and why did you choose that as the templating language for Solid?
Yeah, JSX was something that I didn't get to right away. It was there by the time I open sourced the library, but I was very much like on, you know, other kind of custom templating systems because like that's what I was used to.
Yeah.
But what JSX brought was better than I could have expected. Like this composability of being able to like have a component just be anything and being able to insert it anywhere opens up a whole different realm of types of patterns. And it makes things like, it reduces concepts in a sense, like things like slots. You don't need it if it's just a prop. Like you, whether you use props children or props whatever, it's the same kind of mechanism. You don't have to, you know, there's little things like that. And people, you know, talk about the just JavaScript of map functions and that kind of thing. But like, even if you recognize that there are some DSL specific things like the way we use render props, they're called, where you pass functions as children, you very quickly see something that is very extensible. And extensible not because I wrote a compiler that you can mess with, but extensible because in user space. And that was something that I thought was really great about JSX. The other part was obviously the tooling. Like I didn't have to do so much work. I can't emphasize how much work I saved. And I got to see this first class because I worked on Marco at eBay. And Marco has its own language and everything and does the whole thing. And they're just getting TypeScript in this year. And I remember the journey for Vue and Svelte and that. Like you pick JSX and suddenly it's like, okay, TypeScript, no problem. Linting, no problem. Code syntax highlighting, no problem. Completions, like you just name like IDE support. Like there's just so many things you just get for essentially free. And then like as someone who was not like that wasn't my priority. You know, I know some people, you know, with their framework perspective are like, I want to lower the bar, make it easier for people to come in, all, you know, like that. And that's my primary focus. I want the, you know, which is a very noble purpose. I was this guy working, you know, at a startup on like a project that's like 5 years old or something. You're just like, man, why is this so painful every day? and so like my goals are a little bit different. So when I looked at that part of the problem, being able to just go like, not something I have to worry about, great. Like there's still a lot of flexibility in JSX that people don't realize. You can have namespaces. We actually added, I know a lot of people like, what are they called? Is it actions in Svelte, the directives? We added that to JSX.
Yeah.
So we have actions just like, so like you can still do a lot of stuff. Like the only thing apparently we can't do is punning where you use the same variable name as a shorthand.
Yeah. Can we please get that? Did you see Jared from Bun just literally, he just added that and everyone's like, don't do that. Like, don't add it. Now we have two JSX and like and the other half of people are like, can we just have that? It'd be like what's on your JSX wish list?
Yeah. I mean, that one is one of the ones that was on my wish list. It would also be cool to have something with do expressions. As much as I do like our control flow components, having JavaScript language that's analyzable by a compiler would be actually really, really cool. Like something that we do is we look at ternary operators, like because it's JavaScript, and we can do smart compilation around it. Whereas like a map function could be any function, so we can't do anything smart there. So the idea of being able to like drop for loops in the middle of JSX sounds really, really cool. In general, I will say this: I like that JSX is kind of where it is. I'd rather it kept getting updated or that we could figure out a way to like push things forward like Jared kind of suggested. I mean, I've been tempted at many times to do something like that, just be like, screw it. But then I'd break all the tooling and like everyone would get angry. On the other hand, I actually like it sitting as this kind of like common target syntax thing that all the tooling supports without actually having runtime expectations. There are people and libraries out there that do expect runtime expectations. They expect it to run like React does. This is something I'm constantly kind of battling with, especially with sometimes with things like TypeScript. But for the most part, the fact that like it's not built into the browser, for example, is in my mind a really good thing because then like it gives us this like, if you're like, hey, I want a templating language that works with JavaScript for compilation purposes, then here it is. Because the problem with something like tag template literals, you could do that and tag template literals do work at runtime. So like you have an option there, but the problem is like, if you needed to change the, like you can't change how they run. Like if you had like a compiled version and not compiled version and they work differently, it'd create a kind of mismatch and you can't do that. Like one example of this in Solid is I told you we wrap all the stuff in getters, like in lazy functions. If you want it, you can use Solid without a compiler. completely. Like, you can use tag template literals. You can even use React's JSX transform if you want. But you have to pass around functions a bunch if you actually want it to work properly. It's kind of like a ergonomic awkwardness thing, whereas Solid's JSX compiler just goes, okay, that's a function, I'll handle it for you, you know? And I think you don't even have to write it. Like, you can see it. And I think that for that reason, having a compiled syntax as a target is a really powerful thing to have in the language, even if there isn't like a runtime expectation, like it's not never coming to the browser.
Yeah. So one of the things I really liked in Solid's documentation is your use of like the playground in examples in the training material, or even just like the tutorial, where what you're doing is you're putting real code first, right? It's not just looking at a code embed or whatever. You have, you know, an IDE with the ability that you can type the code and see the updates happen. What did it take to build examples like this? And what did you use? What did you build this on?
Yeah, this was a big effort by a few people, and actually not me, which was actually kind of great. Other people in the core team, like Alexander and Milo, put a lot of work into it. I wrote a lot of text and examples for the tutorial, but from that, I mean, I could just look at things like Svelte. Svelte has like first class in this sort of area, and I got a lot of inspiration in that. But the editor itself, yeah, I believe it was originally built on CodeMirror, and then we switched to Monaco. And then there's a lot of complexity in like handling imports and in-browser builds and all this kind of stuff that luckily I don't know all the details to. It's a very important part of docs to be able to give people different ways to learn. You know, like some people need guides, some people need to try it, some people need, you know, there's all those different forms. I think it's diataxis or whatever, where you have the different types of learning. It's something taken very seriously towards learning materials in Solid. The current docs are actually mostly the product stuff that I'd written, they're not always the most beginner-friendly. We actually have a big effort going on right now at docs.solidjs.com, which is a new version of the docs that have been completely getting rewritten. And I think that's going to make a big difference for people coming to the framework for the first time. So I'm hoping to kind of build on what we've done in the past, but I think there's a lot we can still do.
Yeah. And just if you're out there and you want to see what, you know, Solid looks like in action, just simply going to the examples page in the current docs, it shows you like a good amount of common and both things that you probably won't need to do, like make an Etch-a-Sketch, but like stuff that's fun, right? Like these types of things make it really pretty crystal clear how you implement certain things. If you're the type of person who just says, get me to the code, I want to see the code, let me see what it looks like and feels like. So kudos to that. I think it at least looks great. I can't wait to see what the new docs look like. I haven't checked those out yet. Solid Start, as we've kind of talked about, was whatever meta framework. Is this thing built on Vite, or is it your own thing, or what's it built on?
It's built on Vite. Vite came at the right time. That was like the push that I needed, to kind of get going with this. Vite 2 came out, I think, February 2021. And once that happened and they had this first class support of SSR, it just changed everything, because I realized I could just write these plugins and do these really powerful things. Because classically, and I felt this when I was using Snowpack, no diss to that, but like Snowpack just like formalized the process that we already had in place with Webpack, where it was suddenly like, okay, I need four different build configs to get my app. I need dev for server and client, and I need production for server and client. And because of the way plugins worked and the way you can think, you might actually have four separate configurations you're managing. Vite and the plugin system there sliced the other way. So it was like you'd write the same plugin that would handle SSR and dev. So you could kind of focus on a specific concern. So you could be like, oh, I care about file-based routing. That's a plugin. Well, then it'll slice that way. And suddenly, before I knew it, like I just started going and I couldn't stop. Like I remember especially at the beginning, I think within a month I had our first deployment out on Cloudflare workers. Wow. Doing some like SSR streaming thing at the edge back, I think it was, yeah, March 2021. And I was just like, man, this is so cool. Once I understood that, wow, this was like where it was going to like what people would be able to do very simply. I was kind of hooked on Vite. And honestly, I have to admit, most of the other bundlers and stuff kind of fell to the wayside after we went that way.
No kidding.
We shifted when we did the 1.0 release in July 2021, we basically just dropped, we had a Create React app fork built on Webpack and all that. We just dropped that and we're like, just use the basic Vite dget templates. Like you'll get pretty far. I didn't have all the features, but like the ability to both be really simple, like can have that parcel, like, you know, like it just works, and then be completely configurable still. Like that kind of balance is incredible. It's not that we haven't struggled sometimes in the framework writing side, you know, with when Vite updates and changes and kind of work through that. But that's not something that ever gets really pushed on the end user. They just get all the benefits.
It's unbelievable the amount of stuff that is just built on top of Vite, and like how it's only like what, like a year and a half old, maybe 2 years since V1. And it's unbelievable. Like I remember we were doing Stata.js last year, and it was like the number one, and it had like no previous stats for the previous year. It just so quickly has come up, and what an amazing tool.
Yeah, and then the thing is the Meta framework saw the value there, because like I was already kind of, I knew that a Meta framework was going to happen. But I was dragging my feet. So like I wrote the router thinking about the Meta framework that would use it. Like, so like I was playing around with the router, and, you know, I was building all these pieces that like someone could put it together. And then I was like, okay, someone's going to make a Meta framework one of these days. And then Vite came out and I'm like, oh, Evan and team just implemented all the pieces I didn't implement. Like the missing, like, yeah, it was just like, yeah, like I made the router, then he made the glob imports. So now we can do file system. It was just like suddenly this like matchup that was just like, perfect.
Yeah, glob imports alone like blew my mind. I wrote like a storybook competitor for testing in isolation just for fun, and it was just like, oh, I'm just gonna glob everything with a dot story dot svelte or whatever, and it was able to find that file and do whatever you need with them, and that alone blew the doors open for me for like, oh man, I can actually do some of this stuff myself without even having to go in, even into plugin land or create a plugin or anything like that.
And what I was going to say is the other piece there, which is kind of related, is that I think we all saw that at the same time. SvelteKit moved from Snowpack in February as well. Like we both moved to at the same week, and Astro got built on that, right? Like that's when Astro basically got built. And even like some other projects like Marco, we moved to Vite, like basically a whole bunch of the Meta frameworks that aren't, you know, and Vue is obviously Vite because of Evan. So basically, other than actually the React ecosystem and maybe Angular, everybody basically just moved to Vite almost immediately. So like that brings a lot of, you know, people and a lot of projects over.
You got to wonder about like TurboPack now. Like, so TurboPack, they just announced being the next JS, you know, successor to Webpack, so to say. But like, I mean, Vite has such a firm grasp in this territory now with all of the other Meta frameworks. Like, how is TurboPack going to stack up against something like Vite? Not that they're the same, but, you know, they're kind of doing the similar thing.
Yeah, I mean, Turbo Repo is really powerful and incredible, and we use that on our projects, which kind of gives it a leg in to get into that. The thing with Vite, though, is they don't really care. They'll go wherever the best stuff is. Like, they use ESBuild and Rollup. Mm-hmm. Like, so if like TurboPack gets bigger builds, Vite will incorporate it. It's kind of funny. I don't know which way that dance is going to work, or whether like Turbo Repo is going to like a Vite thing in it, and then like Vite has TurboPack, and like I don't know what that looks like. But I do think that you're right. Like, when someone just approaches and goes, hey, what are you doing right now? And you're like, where I'm sitting, you're just like, yeah, Vite takes care of everything I'm looking for right now. So that is tricky. But better integration between tools is always an angle that tools can like leverage to kind of get their place in the market, you know? So Turbo Repo is also a very big deal. So
yeah, totally.
Is there anything we haven't touched upon with Solid before we move on to the next section of the show?
If anything, the only thing that we haven't touched upon, which is usually something I like talking about, is we haven't talked about the future at all. And I don't know.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Yeah, because we talked a lot about Solid Start, and we talked about Solid kind of came up. We're continuing to work along this path, and I'm really excited to see where things are going. I was talking about Vite and how capable the plugins have been. This has kind of let us do a lot of experimentation to try and push stuff forward. And one of the areas that we've been doing a lot of work recently is around things like partial hydration and things like we're sending less JavaScript. Frameworks like Solid and Svelte are already like so small and kind of lightweight anyways that for a lot of places you kind of get those savings right away. But I'm really interested in how the technology has been heading with things like React Server Components, with things like Islands, and kind of mashing that together. So one of the big things that we've been working on with Solid Start, it's still on the experimental branch, but I think something really cool is what does that next generation of routing look like? We've been playing around with kind of mixing the best of our kind of nested routing that we use in Solid Start with an approach where we can server render parts of those pages and then only serve the JavaScript for the islands in those pages. So you kind of get like a client routing with islands kind of experience. It's very similar kind of feeling to server components, but it's something that we've been playing with a lot recently. And I'm really excited about the direction this takes. I think we haven't all figured out what the best developer experience is in this zone. This is like really the challenge, but the technology is here. You get the sense when you look around and you start seeing the initial work on server components coming out with Next, and you start seeing what Quick has been working on. You mentioned you had Misko on recently, and you start kind of getting an idea of what these pieces are going to look like coming together. And we actually managed to make the Taste movie app demo in using this technology, using Solid Start. It's solid-movies.app.
Oh, cool.
And it's just an incredible little demo because it's the whole thing is 13 kilobytes of JavaScript, and it's client-side routed. Like, it feels like a single-page app, but it's like less than half the size of like what Solid Start without this would be, or SvelteKit. Like, it's just nuts. You get that loading experience of something like Astro, with the navigation experience of something like your typical single page app. And I am very excited to see more stuff in this range, because I think other than server components, which in a harness like Next is fairly large package, like it's probably better aimed at people making larger apps. This is the only other example that I've seen of this yet, where which could be beneficial to even smaller apps or sites. And while this is not like production ready yet, so to speak, the potential here is just incredible. I'm very excited about this.
Yeah, shipping way less JavaScript, right? Yeah,
I'm amazed. I'm just looking at this app here and just viewing source, and then I click through to the largest file that gets downloaded, and I just like flick my finger and I'm at the bottom of it. Not even a flick. I just move my finger and I'm at the bottom of it, and like that's it. Then, like, maybe I can ask you that. Is like, where's the framework? Does it get just compiled away?
Yeah, I mean, like Solid's a little bit bigger than Svelte, for the framework size. But Solid, like, for a basic app, it's going to be like 4 kilobytes of JavaScript. So like, what you're seeing there is 4 kilobytes of JavaScript, maybe like an error boundary or styled anchor tag that we have to update the JavaScript on the client, and the rest of it is being server rendered essentially, and being swapped in a nested fashion, kind of like what you'd see with Solid Start or Remix or SvelteKit or Next now. Like this kind of hybrid between, like, the real secret is if you open any of the network requests as you navigate around, you actually see HTML over the wire, but it's a little bit different than like a TurboLinks, which swaps the whole page. It's actually doing partials. I'm getting a little techie here, but I there's so much potential in this zone of like changing. Like we're on the precipice, I feel, of what that next routing paradigm, like what that next, what that next things will look like. And as I said, we're already seeing the pieces of it. I think the technology is actually mostly just already here. It's just the developer experience needs to catch up. Like we built this with a very simple like import syntax that's kind of similar to using lazy components to define like where the client islands are. We toyed around with like use client, like React Server Components, and we're like, I don't know if like people are going to like this. So it's like there's lots of different approaches to that piece. And I think that's really where we're going to see a lot more work this year, because it always starts with these really cool technologies kind of proving out what's possible, but it takes a whole other thing to make them usable. So
wow, yeah, I definitely think we're on the edge of something in this space right now. There's definitely a lot changing. And it's kind of interesting to see the HTML stuff as well. It's, although my little web scraping heart is hurting a little when the discovering hidden APIs goes away and they just return HTML.
I mean, what's cool about this technology is not even just like, this is kind of like the base case, but I think what's cool is there's a potential, and I don't know, the DX is going to be the final decider of us finally unifying the site versus application thing. And because the truth of the matter is, and we're not there yet in terms of optimization, but these things can scale and switch depending on to how much you want to bring on the client or how much you want to bring on the server, that they, this is like the test in my head of when I'm going to like put the final stamp on it and, you know, say that it's good, is that you can implement it so that if those routed sections are completely like a giant island, it should just work like a single page app, because you're not sending any HTML. You're just sending the props down to those components. And in that case, you're just serializing JSON. You've basically created a JSON API with something like server components, essentially. And then if you go the other way and make the thing really, really small, then you're sending almost all HTML and you're just created like a classic MPA without the page reloading. So like, if we can scale that perfectly, then like maybe we've solved that problem. I don't know. That's my hope.
Love it. Let's get into the supper club part of the show, where we ask you just some questions that we ask a lot of everybody who comes onto the show, just kind of, you know, quick fire, easy answer stuff. So first and foremost, what kind of computer are you using?
MacBook Pro. Or actually, at work, it's a MacBook Pro. That's what I'm using right now. But generally, I do most of my dev on a MacBook Air M1.
What about keyboard? Anything fancy there?
No, I use the built-in one. My laptop just comes around with me everywhere.
What about a terminal and shell?
I probably use the stock ones that come with the Mac. I've never been really big on, you know, specific stuff there. I do use Bash.
I can't believe how common of an answer that is. It's crazy.
What's one thing that you do to stay up to date on the web?
I spend a lot of time on Twitter, I admit, but honestly, I spend a lot of time talking to people involved with these frameworks. One of the best things about my job and position and just like what I get to do is I actually reach out and talk to other framework authors like on a weekly basis.
Nice. Yeah, I think that the answer of being Twitter is extremely common.
If someone were to start coding from scratch today, someone comes to you and say, "Hey, Mr. Ryan, I want to learn how to code." Like, what would you tell them?
I would say probably pick one language, something that is, you know, related to some kind of use case or something that they care to be interested in, and then just kind of focus on learning the fundamentals there. JavaScript is an easy one in the sense that you can get immediate feedback by just like opening up a console in the browser, but that's really only relevant, you know, it depends on what you want to build ultimately at first. You don't have to make that decision up front completely.
So we might have gotten a little bit into this in this episode, but is there one thing in particular you are most excited about in the future of web dev in general?
Yeah, you can tell I've been raving about this for the last couple of years, but I'm really interested to see how we work out the server client divide in terms of things like partial hydration and islands and server components and all that. That's just been my focus the last couple of years, and I feel like we're getting there. Like it's coming together now.
Beautiful. All right, let's move it in the next section now, which is sick picks and shameless plugs. I don't know if you came prepared with a sick pick or not, did you?
Okay. I've been watching. I got a chance to catch up on some Netflix over the holidays recently, and this is very much my flavor. I don't know if it's everyone's flavor, but I absolutely loved Alice in Borderland. It's kind of very manga, Japanese manga kind of based a story. Kind of battle royale, you know, it's violent and it's definitely, you know, kind of gory, but I love clever problem solving type, very anime-ish storylines. So I got to recently check out season two, season one and season two together. I absolutely love that show.
I don't know how this escaped me. This is right up my alley. So I sincerely appreciate you sick picking this because
I was going to say
if I hear battle royale like or anything to that degree, I'm ears are perking up. So
shameless plugs. What do you got for us today?
Oh, I mean, I'm just going to plug all my own stuff, right? Obviously, I do Friday weekly streams on YouTube and Twitch. You can find me at YouTube at Ryan Solid and Twitch Ryan Solid. Yeah, I mean, that's the main one. Go to SolidJS website, click the link to the Discord, join the community. That's really where everything's happening, and extends out to GitHub and all the rest. But really, come join us on Discord. It's really, we're always working towards the future, and I think it's a lot of fun.
Sweet. Yeah, we'll make sure those links are in the show notes. Well, thanks so much, Ryan. This has been awesome. It's so great to hear all of the different approaches. I mean, everybody has these totally different, just different solutions to the same kind of problems that we're all trying to solve here. And it's just amazing to hear all of the work that you're doing. So thanks so much for coming on and sharing everything that you have to. Everyone out there, give Solid a try. Head on over to those examples and see what those things look like. See what the code experience is like. Give it a try. Extremely worth your time. So thank you so much, Ryan, for coming on, and we'll see you around.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks, appreciate it.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.